This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Lead pass, Darren Helm is in alone, and Connor Hellebuck makes the big save.
Two on one with Nemeth. Play it to him. What a stop! Connor Hellebuck dives cross crease, keeps that goal out. Another dynamic save by Connor Hellebuck.
A mashup of saves from Connor Hellebuck. He had plenty of those in the previous season. The Jets reward him with a six-year contract extension. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning on TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by my colleagues Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg, producer Rory doing the great job behind the board. Gentlemen, good morning to you both. Nice to see you after a week's hiatus. We were off last week, of course, for the World Cup soccer.
It's good to be back.
It's nice to see you. Ezzy, clean shaven. Not used to seeing you without any facial hair at the moment. But
no,
the,
it's too hot out.
It's too hot.
I had to shave the beard off.
Yeah.
It was, what, plus 39 with the Humidex yesterday. The beard just had to come off.
The beard had to go. You're a big guy, a little sweaty with the beard. I don't blame you in the least bit. Dave Minuk, good to see you as well. Looking your most handsome self.
Well, I appreciate that, Drew. Thank you very much.
Anyways, we get started, of course, on this Saturday morning by talking about the big news in the Winnipeg Jets world, and that was the announcement a couple days ago that Connor Hellebuck has signed a six-year contract extension with the Winnipeg Jets, avoiding salary arbitration with the team. You know, no real surprise in that they were able to come to an agreement. There was no animosity between the two sides, so the expectation was that they were going to come to a workable number, and they were able to do that. It's a six-year contract extension, of course, for Connor Hellebuck, $37 million. It's going to pay him a salary cap hit of just over $6.1 million per season for the next 6 years. Your thoughts on this contract, Mr. Ginsberg? You know, it just seems like a reasonable contract given the performance that he had last year, where this is a guy who had a lot of question marks entering the previous season. He answered them, and as a result, timing worked out very well for him. He gets rewarded with a big contract.
Yeah, I agree, Drew, and I actually think the Jets get some pretty good value here when you consider a goaltender like Henrik Lundqvist is making $8.5 million for three more years, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Connor Hellebuck becomes the sixth highest paid goaltender right now, but I actually thought he'd be closer to $6.5 million. And Ken Wiebe of the Winnipeg Sun was on the Afternoon Riot on Thursday, and he was talking about that, and Ken said that, you know, he thought maybe Hellebuck would get the 8 years. We knew that it was going to be a minimum of 6 years here, but, you know, $6.16 million a year is very fair for, as you mentioned, a player who had a career year last year, you know, sets the record for most wins by an American-born goaltender, is a Vezina Trophy finalist, a runner-up to Pekka Rinne. I mean, he was the Jets' MVP last year, and that's, you know, no disrespect at all to Blake Wheeler. You know, Connor Hellebuck really proved himself as a number one goaltender. So this contract makes a lot of sense to me, guys. You know, even though, you know, it was maybe a little bit lower than you thought it was going to be, we knew it was going to be kind of somewhere between $6 and $6.5 million a year. Drew, I know that Braden Holtby was a good comparable for you. So this was a no-brainer for the Jets. Hellebuck's coming off of the career year, and you have to lock up this goaltender because you know that you're going to build your team around him for years and years to come.
Well, that's the question. You know, this is a guy in Connor Hellebuck who really has had only one, I mean, of his years in the NHL, he's only had 1 year that is outstanding. It was a couple years ago, of course, that he was sort of struggled in his first, you know, major taste of NHL action. But obviously, he came into his own last season. Do you think that there could be any buyer beware or any potential regrets? Last time the Jets signed a goaltender to a big-dollar contract was Andrei Pavlik, and we know that that certainly ended up being a bad contract. Not saying that Connor Hellebuck is Andrei Pavlik by any stretch. Hellebuck's more talented. But do you think that little voice maybe exists in the back of the head saying, we hope we didn't screw up a second goaltender contract?
Yeah, no, I really don't think so. I mean, I think this team knows that what they have in Connor Hellebuck, and I mean, he's a home-drafted player, and they have a lot of confidence in him. They saw what he was willing to do last summer in terms of, you know, his training and changing up his training and you know, taking his game to that next level. We saw it in the playoffs. I mean, he was excellent. He's been excellent all season. He's been consistent. The only thing you ever have to worry about when a player signs a big deal like this, I think, is that in the first year, they're trying to prove it. You know, like in a contract year, a player says, well, I need to play well because I want to earn my next contract. Sometimes in the first year of a big deal, a player tries very hard to prove that they're worth the value. But to me, Connor Hellebuyck is the worth the value because, you know, the reality is this, boys. How often do you find starting goaltenders in the NHL like that? You just don't. You really just it can be a very difficult proposition to find yourself a goaltender that gives you the type of consistency that Connor Hellebuyck gave the Jets last year. And sure, it was 1 year, but I mean that was one very impressive year. And the Jets defense played better, but again, at the same time, knowing that you have that, as he just talked about, having a goalie locked up for that period of time, when you consider that your avenue to win, your window to win with this group is probably in the next 5 years, I think it's a good move.
And guys, that 2016-17 season, we know that Connor Hellebuyck was rushed a little bit and mm-hmm. probably played more games than he should have, right? Mm-hmm. Instead of playing close to 60 games, he probably should have been closer to, I don't know, 30 to 40 games. And, you know, that's why they acquired Steve Mason last summer. And obviously, Connor Hellebuyck outplayed Steve Mason and ended up playing, you know, a career amount of games in the NHL. He was just under 70. We talked about it. You know, Andre Pavlik was never nominated for the Vezina Trophy, right?
No.
Pavlik never had a 40-win-plus season in the NHL. And aside from the season 2 years ago where Hellebuyck struggled, his development curve, it is exactly how you would want a goaltender to develop. Since the Jets drafted him, in 2013, he had the 2 years at UMass Lowell.
Mm-hmm.
He won the Mike Richter Award. He was the best goaltender in American college hockey. He was an excellent goaltender for the St. John's Ice Caps and Manitoba Moose. His numbers were great, even though the team wasn't great. He had a 920-plus save percentage. And then he gets called up to the Jets, and his first taste of NHL action, he's very solid. It was really only that one hiccup 2 years ago when he was really, I think, given too much responsibility. And you probably should have had, you know, Andre Pavlik in there, I think, playing more games, or at the very least, a veteran goaltender playing more. But right now, I think the sky's the limit for Connor Hellebuyck. You forget he's only 25 years old. He's already been nominated for a Vezina Trophy. And I think it's important to note here, guys, that Hellebuck's not going to have 40-win seasons every single year. I mean, he's going to have years where he has down years. Look at Carey Price, Drew.
Sure.
I mean, Carey Price just had a bad year. But that's also because the team in front of him was awful.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so even Carey Price, who most people think is a top three goaltender in the world, he had a bad year last year, obviously dealt with some injuries, but I think it's important to note here that, yeah, with goaltenders, you are going to have a drop-off sometimes, but there's no reason to think that the Jets are going to regret this contract. In fact, I think they got really good value here.
67 games played for Hellebuyck last year. Is that sort of where you expect him to be at? Assuming his performance is consistent through the life of this contract, right around sort of the 65-70 game mark as a really, you know, an ace in baseball, a number one goaltender in hockey?
I don't think so. I think he'll be a little bit less. Coach Maurice talked about it towards the end of this, I think in the end of season scrum, about, you know, was he happy with the number of games? And I think he said, by his own admission, that there'd probably be three or four games less that he would have probably played him, just to get him, keep him fresh and good for the playoff run. And I think overall they were happy with the scheduling of his starts. But I think from his own, you know, like I said, from what he had said to the media, I think his thought process was maybe under 65 games, just to keep him fresh. I mean, look, we're not talking about a tremendous amount, but and you know, we saw with Artur Zerbe when he was in Carolina, he wasn't afraid to start. I think he started him, what, like 71 times or something like that in the season.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like he's adverse
to it. But Marty Brodeur started 76 one year.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying it's impossible.
They're saying under Maurice, though.
Yeah. I'm just saying, like,
any excuse to say Brodeur's name, right, is he?
I just think that it's a function of keeping your goalie fresh, and you want to have a backup that you have confidence in that you can put him into those so you don't have to give him back-to-back starts mm-hmm. and that sort of idea.
And, Dave, I don't think Hellebuyck is going to play 70 or 72 games. Mm-hmm. I just think we're splitting hairs here, right?
Like,
I don't think that Hellebuyck is going to play 55 games. I think he's going to be somewhere between, let's say, 63 and 65 games. So what are we talking about here? We're talking about two or four less games, right? And especially with Laurent Brossoit as the backup goaltender right now as it stands.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can't expect Brossoit to play any more than 15 to 20 games.
Tops. I mean, he doesn't have any real NHL pedigree to say that he can handle more of a workload than that.
My point was that this is a segment that we usually do at the beginning of September when Drew does the over-under. And
sure.
We're sitting there going, does Connor Hellebuyck play X number of games, so I suspect we'll be doing this.
I think it's going to be really close to 67.
Okay.
Well, I mean, I think at the very least you're talking 60.
You can marinate on that question until that over-under segment at the beginning of the season. Let me ask you this, though. So Hellebuck's numbers this year, we know the win total was outstanding. Mm-hmm. 44 wins, 2.36 goals against average, 924 save percentage. Taking the wins out of the equation, but the, just looking at
the... You should
take the
goals against average out of the equation, too.
Really? Why?
It's a team stat.
So you think the Jets, if his goals against average goes up, you think the Jets would be okay with that?
I just think save percentage, and especially even strength save percentage, is a better stat.
Okay, so does he need to sort of... That 924 save percentage that he put up this year, is that the sort of the benchmark that he needs to be in and around over the life of this contract to have it be a quality contract or the right value on the contract?
Yeah, and you know, if you look at his career save percentage at the AHL level and the NHL level, he's right around kind of 921, 922. So, I mean, we're talking about, you know, above average, actually well above average save percentage in the NHL, right?
Yeah.
So I would expect it to be right around there. And, you know, it's possible that you see it climb up a little bit. You don't see very many goaltenders have a save percentage above 930. Carter Hutton had the best save percentage in the NHL this year. I believe he was 931.
Something like that, yeah. And in this day and age, you're right. You know, that's, you know, right where you want. That's above average for a save percentage in this day. I mean, that's where the Jets have never been, is above average in terms of a save percentage over the course of a season. Hellebuck accomplished that this year.
Well, and there's an advanced stat for goaltenders called goal saved above average. And I reference it on illegalcurve.com. So if you want a better understanding of it, you can go to the website and check it out. But essentially, it's, you know, it's just the goals this goalie prevented given his save percentage and shots faced versus the league average save percentage on the same number of shots. And his number was plus 23.75, which was the fourth best in the NHL. And he went from a minus 9 the previous season to plus 23. It's a significant number.
Sure.
And so the only goalies that were ahead of him were Pekka Rene, John Gibson, and Antti Raanta. And he obviously played more games than all of those guys. So, you know, his numbers definitely improved. Like, you know, like I said, we sometimes talk to the goalie experts, and they generally reference that as a good stat to look at. So, if you're looking at those types of goalie stats, his numbers definitely improved over the previous year by a big percentage.
Last word on this contract extension, of course, it being worth $37 million, 37 being Connor Hellebuck's number. Last word goes to Mr. Hellebuck. If there's any significance about that, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio, 1290.
Terms are now starting to be released around this league, so we have a sense of what the contract is. Was there something symbolic about the $37
million? I knew that question was going to come. Sure. I get. No,
you
it's
have
a great
the
number.
Higher jersey number.
I think I was going for 73 at one point. No, it's just it's an exciting time, and you know, just the hard work we've put into this past year and the year before, and you know, it's an exciting time to be in Winnipeg.
But it wasn't a set that you wanted it to equal 37?
No, it wasn't. I mean, definitely feels good that I landed there, but it wasn't anything set.
Connor, we went through this.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
In the corner for Scheifele. Scheifele finds Trouba, scores! 4-point night for Mark Scheifele. 3-point night for Joel Armia. Jacob Trouba with his second point of the game. And for Trouba, goal number 5. And the Jets put 6 up on the board.
6 goals for that Jets victory over the Dallas Stars from February of 2016. Jacob Trouba contributing on the score sheet in that game. Arbitration dates have been set. Jacob Trouba heads to arbitration 6 days from today, July 20th. Adam Lowry on the 22nd, Brandon Tanev on the 25th, and Marco Dano on July the 30th. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, the teams have to exchange arbitration numbers if it comes to that 48 hours ahead of time. So it'll be on July the 18th, if no agreement has been reached by that point in time, that the two sides will exchange their contract offers before heading in to the arbitration hearing on the 20th. None of this precludes, of course, the exchanging of numbers or the hearing itself. None of that precludes an agreement from getting done ahead of time. It will be July 20th, the first possible date for Jacob Trouba of the Winnipeg Jets.
Drew, you have to keep in mind
yes.
that no Winnipeg Jet player has actually gone the full way and actually gone to an arbitration ruling.
Yes.
And almost 90% of these cases never
I believe
reach
there was only
arbitration.
One case last season that actually ended with an arbitrator's award, and that was Nate Schmidt of the Vegas Golden Knights after he came over from the Washington Capitals in the expansion draft. Nate Schmidt actually went through the arbitration hearing with the Golden Knights and had a great season and was rewarded with a contract extension. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with Trouba, with the Jets, if they're able to come to an agreement in the next few days, or if they do indeed exchange numbers and head into the hearing on July the 20th. What do you think is going to happen with Jacob Trouba, with the Jets? You know, both sides have said all the right things in terms of trying to get a long-term deal done. But, you know, we are at the point now where we're only about 4 or 6 days away where push will come to shove and something will either happen, be it a one-year award via the arbitrator or be it a contract extension between both sides.
Yeah, Drew, of the remaining four RFAs, there's no doubt that Jacob Trouba is going to be the toughest one. I think, you know, when you're talking about Brandon Tanev and you're talking about Marco Dano, you're talking about 1 or 2 year contracts. When you're talking with Adam Lowry, I wouldn't be surprised if Lowry gets a 4 or 5 year deal. But when you're talking about Jacob Trouba, I mean, the Jets could easily end up signing Trouba to an 8 year contract here. And it's going to be difficult on this one because I think if you ask Jacob Trouba and you ask his agent, they believe that Trouba is a $7 million a year defenseman. Trouba, unfortunately, though, is coming off of a year in which his offensive totals weren't that good,
mm-hmm.
including the playoffs. And, you know, for a number one shutdown defenseman, I think you're selling Trouba more at this point on his role as a shutdown defenseman. And I do believe that Trouba's offensive numbers will get better. And we should mention he missed 27 games this year.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he only had 3 goals and 24 points. And if you're asking for upwards of $7 million a year, I mean, you're asking for the type of money that defensemen get when they're putting up, you know, 45, 55 points a year, right? So I think Trouba's probably going to be closer to around $6 million a year. And, you know, we're going to find out very soon, guys, if Trouba is going to sign long-term with the Jets. There always is the chance that this does go to arbitration. Obviously, you know, the Jets don't want that. Trouba might want that so that he can, you know, prove himself even more and maybe get, you know, more of a more on the AAV side on his next contract. But it makes a lot of sense to me to be around 6 or 7 years and $6 million a year. Now, it's pretty clear that the Jets want to sign Trouba, and it's clear that Trouba wants to stay here. He has no issues with usage that he had a couple of years ago. So I do believe this deal is going to get done, but it's tricky because, as I said, you know, his offensive numbers weren't great this year, plus he missed, you know, 25 games. So,
Dave, how do you see this playing out between the Jets and Trouba? We've talked about it. I mean, we've talked about it ad nauseum almost since the, you know, the contract dispute a couple seasons ago. We know that eventually ended with him signing that 2-year bridge contract. And now we sit here where arbitration's on the table, a long-term contract's on the table. I mean, I think a trade is still possibly on the table if it looks like the numbers are just too, you know, incomparable between the two sides. How do you think it's going to play out?
Well, I mean, this is like a puzzle piece. And you know, Kevin Sheveldayoff has a big puzzle in front of him assembled probably at the cottage. He's sitting there and he's got to figure out, you know, I mean, because Trouba, as he touched on, is going to want a certain number, but that number has to work within the Jets framework.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, to your point, Drew, maybe you overpay him a little bit, but know that in the back of your mind, perhaps that has to be a trade option later on down, you know, in a year or 2 years, because you're going to have guys like Patrick Laine, his number is going to be massive next year, not next year, but the year after.
Yeah.
Kyle Connor, you're going to have a bunch of guys.
Like Wheeler,
that's the whole point. You're going to have a lot of guys you have to pay, and that's what happens with good teams, that you have players that you're going to have to start to move out because you can't, like we saw with the Chicago Blackhawks.
Sure.
Now, what the Jets are hoping, of course, is that within that wheelhouse, they've won one championship, maybe two, and then they can start making those tough decisions. But again, like I said, to me, Jacob Trouba, with his pairing with Josh Morrissey, with the chemistry they have, with Dustin Byfuglien getting older, this is your defenseman of the future. We've seen it. And again, we talk about it with the Jets, like every NHL team, but it's more so with the Jets because of the idea of free agents not necessarily seeing Winnipeg as your number one destination. When you have a guy that you've drafted and developed, which of course every team does, but still, it's a little, like, the emphasis is a little more significant here. I think you have to retain him, and I think that they're going to try and do everything they can to make it a long-term deal.
Dave Weber mentioned this on Thursday, his best comparables for Jacob Trouba are Seth Jones and Colton Parayko. Now, Seth Jones signed a six-year deal after his entry-level contract.
Right.
He makes $5.4 million a year. It was a six-year, $32.4 million contract. Colton Parayko makes $5.5 million a year. Mm-hmm. Now, you have to adjust for inflation, right? Seth Jones signed that contract a couple of years ago, so contracts have gone up, obviously.
Yeah.
So maybe let's say that, you know, $5.4 million 2 years ago was right around $6 million a year. If you're Jacob Trouba's agent, it's hard to say that your defenseman is a better, your client, I should say, is better than Seth Jones. Jones is coming off a 57-point season. Now, Seth Jones and Jacob Trouba are both drafted. Sorry, Seth Jones was drafted a year after.
Right.
He was in the 2013 draft. But the point is, I think it's tough to argue that Trouba's a $7 million a year defenseman based on his offensive numbers. He's an excellent shutdown defenseman, but I just don't know if Trouba's ever going to put up 50 to 55 points in the NHL. I think he's probably more around 35 to 40 points.
Especially given the fact that, you know, Dustin Byfuglien is still on the roster and still going to get those number one power play minutes. He's going to get those number one scoring opportunity minutes, that there is a glass ceiling above Trouba in terms of what you can expect from his offensive, you know, output, simply because the opportunity isn't going to be there like it would be, you know, with a guy like Seth Jones, who's in a different situation playing, you know, number one minutes in Columbus. And, you know, a guy you mentioned, Colton Parayko, he's not getting those number one minutes necessarily in St. Louis either, with some other guys who are more offensively inclined who might be above him.
And that's why Colton Parayko is a good example of a defenseman that I think Jacob Trouba is better than. Right.
Sure.
That's why I think he falls somewhere between kind of, you know, $6 million, $6.5 million. I wouldn't be surprised if he gets a little bit more than $6 million. But I think if you're talking about $7 million a year, I think that's ridiculous.
So is that your Kevin Cheveldayoff's upper limit in your mind, Dave? Is maybe that 6.5 mark? That's his ceiling. That anything above that, you're paying a guy for, well, just it would just be too much money given the role that he's playing for your team.
Yeah, and I suspect that would be the argument his Jacob Trouba's agent is going to make, is it's opportunity. You know, if you give his player the opportunity to be on the first power play and you know and other situations, then he'll put up those points. And so, you know, you can't really reference his limited points because he hasn't been given those opportunities. And if you give him those, then he would produce, you know. So it's a little bit of a catch-22 in that regard. But I again, he's going to make it the best of his ability. I would put him into that $6 to $6.5 million for sure.
And again, guys, I'm not saying that I don't like Jacob Trouba's game. I'm not saying that he's not, you know, a $7 million a year player. I'm saying based on the comparables. I mean, he is one of the Jets' best defensemen. Jacob Trouba and Josh Morrissey are the Jets' two best defensemen. Don't make any mistake about that, but I'm just talking about, I think, you know, whereas a couple of years ago, we were thinking, okay, well, he's going to have, you know, that great offensive year. He's going to put up 40 to 50 points. That just hasn't happened yet.
He's going to be Drew Doughty.
Right, so you can't pay him $7 to $8 million a year to be an excellent defensive defenseman. But I think you can pay him somewhere around $6 to $6.5.
Well, you know, a guy, Marc-Andre Vlasic, Mark-Edward Vlasic, sorry, I got Marc-Andre Fleury and Mark-Edward Vlasic in San Jose is one of the best shutdown defensemen in the game. And he just signed on July 1st of last season when he was eligible for a contract extension where he was going to be an unrestricted free agent. He just signed for $7 million a season. So if Marc-Edward Vlasic is the best shutdown defenseman in the league,
and he's 6 years older than Trouba,
and he's 6 years older, and he was about to be eligible for unrestricted free agency, and he's had, you know, some success more offensively than Trouba's had, that's the utmost ceiling. You can't go that high because Trouba's not yet Marc-Edward Vlasic. You know, he might, if he developed into Marc-Edward Vlasic and then the Jets have to sign him to that contract, you know, after this contract expires, be it in 5 years or 6 years, so be it at that point in time.
And this, the reason why this contract is so important is because you know that you have cost certainty with players like Marco Dano and Brandon Tanev. They're going to be somewhere around $1 million a year. I would expect, you know, Adam Lowry to be somewhere around $1.5 to $2 million a year. But after next year, that's when you're going to have to find that money for Patrick Laine. You're going to have to find that money for Blake Wheeler. You're going to have to find that money for Kyle Connor, right? So that $1 million is very important. You can't overpay Trouba here.
You absolutely can't. It's going to be an interesting one. I think the Jets do get a little bit fortuitous in that Trouba is the first arbitration case. Can you imagine if he was one of the last arbitration cases as the Jets were trying to budget and everything else for their offseason, and they had to wait till, I think the last case might be something like August 4th or something?
Something like that.
Being that it's July 20th, it'll be a lot quicker. It'll be a lot easier in that the Jets will know what they have to pencil Trouba in for maybe this year or maybe in the future. This week, the chickens will come home to roost, and everybody will get to know what Jacob Trouba's future is with the Jets, be it on a one-year or multi-year contract extension. Before we go to break, I should have mentioned that this segment was brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. When we come back, we'll discuss the Ottawa Senators. Things are still a little bit chaotic in the nation's capital. James Gordon of TheAthletic.com joins us next to talk about the Senators. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Fantastic.
Saturday morning, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. The Erik Karlsson saga continues in Ottawa as the Sens defenseman looks to be on his way out. As for where he's going to go, we will find that out soon enough. James Gordon of TheAthletic.com going to join us coming up in a couple minutes' time here on the show. This segment brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. This Senator saga continues. It's been a terrible offseason. It's been a terrible last 12 months in the nation's capital. You know, they allegedly gave Erik Karlsson a contract extension offer. It really sounds like that was more perfunctory than it was anything legitimate. I mean, if you want to keep Erik Karlsson, you basically just give him a blank check and say, you know, you want to be more than, if you want more than Drew Doughty money, we'll give you more than Drew Doughty money. It seems like they didn't really try to keep him that hard. They're sitting here. They haven't traded him yet. They can't go into training camp, which is, you know, 6 weeks away, 7 weeks away, with this Erik Karlsson situation still hanging over their heads, can they?
Yeah, I would agree with that, Drew. I think you want to move Erik Karlsson because it's pretty clear after Karlsson rejected Ottawa's contract offer, he doesn't want to be there right now.
And
it's understandable with the way things have gone, not just with the Mike Hoffman situation, but the way the team went from an Eastern Conference finalist to a team that has really become the laughingstock of the NHL.
Mm-hmm.
And that's no disrespect to the city of Ottawa. I've got family in Ottawa. Drew, you've lived in Ottawa, but the way last year went, I mean, it was a complete gong show.
It was a complete gong show. The ownership saga is continuing unabated. I mean, you have a owner in Eugene Melnyk who... seems like almost everybody just doesn't want him to own the team anymore, except for Eugene Melnyk. That goes a long way. He says that, you know, there's always rumors bubbling up that somebody wants to come in. They you know, there's more or less offers on the table to purchase the team from him, yet he's not interested in those offers. You know, it seems like ownership needs to, something needs to happen with the ownership situation to get the organization back on solid footing. And, you know, this Erik Karlsson saga is also a thing that needs to get the, you know, back on solid footing for the Senators, Dave.
I mean, yeah, no, there's no question about that. But the reality is that Eugene Melnyk is the owner, and you're not going to just be able to say, well, we don't want you to be the owner anymore. Well, it's a little unfortunate for you. He owns the team. He pays the salaries. And, you know, we learned that they've cut back significantly in terms of how many people they have in certain roles when we were talking about the Senators a couple of weeks ago. And so it's a tough situation, and it's got to be just killer for fans in Ottawa who sat there watching their team go to the Eastern Conference Final, and now they have a team that it looks like they're going to have to blow it up. And we're talking perhaps, you know, an early 90s Senator that were the laughingstock of the NHL for so many years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's unfortunate because, you know, you think when your team reaches the pinnacle like that, you think to yourself, okay, we never didn't necessarily hit the promise line this year, but we've got ourselves a window. And that window is usually a couple of years where you're going to be a contender. And then you take a step back like they did. And now, of course, a lot of people are referencing the Senators as a cautionary tale for the Jets. But sticking with Ottawa, it really is interesting how you can just see this whole thing blow up the way it did. And it's unfortunate, but I think that just to get, you know, just to have a fresh start, you have to just blow the whole thing up and start all over again.
Right. This was handled poorly from the start. And then you hear Pierre Dorion say that, you know, he wasn't aware of the Erik Karlsson, Mike Hoffman situation until after the season. But then earlier he said that they were aware of it earlier, close to the trade deadline. Mm-hmm. Because Mike Hoffman's name came out of nowhere prior to the trade deadline. I mean, Mike Hoffman, by all accounts, his contract was a good contract for the Senators. He's locked up for, what, 2 or 3 more years, I believe? And if you look at his production and his cap hit, you know, it's pretty good for the Ottawa Senators. So it's hard to believe that the Senators were not aware of that situation earlier in the season. And when you're talking about this trade, guys, I mean, it came out a couple of weeks back that, you know, a trade was imminent with the Tampa Bay Lightning. And so, you know, we started to speculate, not us, but, you know,
people
started to speculate who's coming back, right? Tyler Johnson, you know, Ryan Callahan, maybe a third team was involved. You heard the Rangers might be involved or the Devils might be involved to take Ryan Callahan's contract. And then you heard that it might be Mikhail Sergachev who was going to Ottawa. I mean, the Senators really have to nail this trade because the Senators weren't going to be a good team next year with Karlsson. Now that they're going to trade Karlsson,
yeah.
I mean, they're going to be a bad team for at least the next 2 years.
And they don't own their own first-round pick, of course, next year.
Colorado's very happy right now.
Yeah, Colorado wants them to trade Erik Karlsson very quickly. Let me ask you guys this. You have this situation where the Karlsson thing hangs over the organization, and you've heard that both Dallas at times are the front-runner and that the Tampa Bay Lightning are at times the front-runner to acquire Karlsson. Which of those two teams can put together a more attractive package in your mind for Karlsson? I mean, you've heard that Miro Heiskanen, the former third overall pick, is what Ottawa wants from Dallas in exchange for Karlsson. You know, Tampa Bay's got a litany of talent, as he mentioned, Sergachev, mentioned Tyler Johnson. Which of those two teams can put together the more attractive package in your mind?
You know, it sounds like it's going to be Tampa because right now Dallas doesn't want to have any talk of Heiskanen. So, I mean, if you're Ottawa is basically saying we want Heiskanen. Dallas is saying we're not prepared to move him because we think he's going to be a huge piece of our puzzle moving forward. But it's interesting because if I'm Dallas or Tampa, again, windows to win, right? In the NHL, they don't go on generally for that long. So, I mean, you really have, and this is a piece that if you add him, does he put you over that edge? You know, sure, you might be giving up talent for 5 years down the line, but a Stanley Cup in your back pocket does a lot for a general manager with the fan base, with the ownership. So it's important to do.
And Dave, what's really complicating this is it's pretty clear the Senators want to include Bobby Ryan and his $7.2 million a year contract in this, right?
Isn't that so short-sighted, though? I agree with you. But if you're the Senators,
no one wants to take it.
Of course not. It's a horrible contract. And if you're the Ottawa Senators, don't you just have to say, like, just get the best possible package in return for Erik Karlsson and forget about the poison pill that is the Bobby Ryan contract? Look, it's a bad contract. Everybody knows it's a bad contract. You're going to be saddled with it. You're going to be a lousy team. Don't you just want to get the most talent in return as opposed to, you know, maybe taking a little bit less talent and, you know, getting rid of that contract?
It's an easy answer, 100%. And the reality is because, first of all, Ottawa is not even close to the salary cap.
Right, they're closer probably to the salary floor than
right.
they are
so,
anything.
So being able to, I mean, sure, nobody wants to pay off that kind of money. But at the same time, if you're talking about assets, Drew, and this is what the especially a team like Ottawa mm-hmm. that essentially is accepting that they're going to be a rebuild team or a quasi-rebuild or whatever yeah, terminology.
They're a rebuild
yeah,
team.
Yeah, but I mean, you know what I mean?
They are going to be awful next
right.
year.
And so the point, although
just Craig, horrible.
Although, well, I mean, Craig Anderson requested
but
trade.
But he wants to be traded too, even though this would be his bounce back
well,
season based
say,
on his numbers.
He always has a
every second year.
Yeah, every second year is a good year. So he's in line to have a good year next season.
They might be the worst team in the league next year.
With no first round pick. Can you imagine?
Well, yeah, and Drew, that I think is what what makes it so important to nail the Karlsson trade, because the fact
yes.
is, knowing that you're not going to have that first round pick next year,
you need immediate talent.
You need not necessarily immediate in the sense that it's going to make an impact in the next year or the year after, the year after you'd want it. But you know, you've got Tkachuk in the system now. You've got some players, but you know, you've traded
Thomas
away.
Chabot.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. So you've got some young players, but you need to augment that. You can't because
you have to get a young defenseman in return, And I can understand why Jim Neal doesn't want to part with Miro Heiskanen, Dave.
Right.
I mean, Miro Heiskanen, if you listen to what scouts have said about him since before he was drafted, I mean, this is a guy that, you know, he could be a Norris Trophy caliber defenseman, and I think they think that highly of him.
But you know that Erik Karlsson already is.
Right. But I'm just saying you're potentially giving away a defenseman. I'm not saying that's going to be better than Karlsson, but it sounds like they don't want to give up on him just yet.
I guess
yet.
The question from Dallas's perspective, if you don't want to give up Heiskanen, is that do you think that Karlsson doesn't make your team any closer to being a true Stanley Cup contender?
Right, which, again, like I think in the immediate, I understand the rationale. You're trying to think long term. But oftentimes the NHL can be, not necessarily, but can be a "what have you done for me lately" league, and so you're thinking to yourself, well, if you're the Dallas Stars and you're Jim Neal, you kind of want to, you know, you've got veteran talent, you want to win with that veteran talent now, not in 2, 3, 4 years.
Dave, Julius Honka is the other defenseman. If a trade does happen with Dallas, it's believed that Honka would be part of that.
Honka and Heiskanen, or I guess
not both, just one.
Well, Heiskanen, you know, dials up the excitement meter a little bit. I don't know if Honka does it to the same degree. In any event, let's head to break. We're going to bring in James Gordon now after these commercials. We'll talk more about the Karlsson saga. We'll talk more about the Senators franchise and how they seem a little rudderless right now. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
From The Athletic in Ottawa, Ontario, we're pleased to welcome back to the program our good friend James Gordon. James, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
No problem. How are you guys?
Doing very well, James. Appreciate your time on this Saturday morning, or Saturday afternoon, I guess, now in the nation's capital. James, we were talking about Erik Karlsson last segment and how we sit here on the 14th of July and the saga continues, or, you know, there's no real news or no real developments on that front. We've heard the Tampa Bay Lightning are the leaders in the clubhouse to acquire Erik Karlsson. We've heard the Dallas Stars are the leaders in the clubhouse to acquire Erik Karlsson. With training camp, you know, 7, 8 weeks away, give or take, you know, does this have to be resolved before the Senators gather again to start the next season, or can you foresee a circumstance that this carries on into training camp?
I don't think it, you know, 100% has to get resolved. I think that that would be the ideal situation, and it's not unprecedented here. I mean, I covered the team back when Danny Heatley had requested a trade, and then they weren't able to deal him before the season started, so it definitely made for a bit of an awkward start to training camp. I mean, he obviously didn't want to be there, and, you know, people were kind of tiptoeing around the whole situation. Eventually, they were able to trade him. So, like, it could happen that Erik Karlsson will be in camp, and it definitely sounds like the Senators aren't just going to take whatever offer for him in the meantime. I think it definitely adds some pressure to the situation if it gets to there, because, I mean, everybody knows how this is going. You know, he's given, you know, very little indication that he's going to sign here, and the team is going to is probably going to move him as quick as they can when they get a deal that makes them happy. But in the meantime, it can definitely make for some weird times around here, and there's been a lot of those lately.
James, how important is it going to be for Sens GM Pierre Dorion to acquire a quality young defenseman? You know, we've heard that, you know, the Ottawa Senators want Miro Heiskanen from the Dallas Stars, or if a trade happens with the Tampa Bay Lightning, they want Mikhail Sergachev. How important is it going to be to get that defenseman, you know, in between the age of 19 and 22, considering that aside from Thomas Chabot, they don't have any top-end defensive prospects in the system right now?
Yeah, that's true. And, I mean, you know, I think the team is a little higher on Cody Ceci than everybody else, and they probably think that he can play some big minutes here. But certainly, yeah, I mean, when you go beyond the Thomas Chabot and you look into the system, there's not a lot to get excited about there. So certainly you can definitely see that as a priority for them. But I mean, I think it'll get to the point here where, you know, if they can make a deal work with, you know, the kinds of players they want, I think position will get a little less important, and they really just need to, you know, if you're going to trade basically a guy who's a guaranteed Hall of Famer already, who is the face of the franchise, who is the captain, and then you're going to trade him after trading the previous captain, who's basically a god around here, I mean, you need a huge return. And whatever that winds up being, you know, positionally or not, it needs to be huge. And I think that's why there's a big hang up here right now, because I don't know that the Senators have seen anything that can, I guess, match the stature of Erik Karlsson here. And, you know, it's interesting to watch as an outsider too, to see a team like Dallas, who's not really willing to give up Heiskanen, even though, you know, is this guy ever going to be close to Erik Karlsson? I mean, this is a generational player we're talking about here. So, you know, they definitely can't afford to sell low here with him. And I think, you know, part of the problem with moving him is that other teams know that, and they think they can keep squeezing the Senators as long as they can, because there's only so many teams that that he'll go to. And part of it, too, is whether or not he's willing to negotiate an extension before that and deal with those teams. So, you know, you could see him wanting to go to Tampa maybe due to the tax treatment, and he has friends on the team and it looks like a contender. I think that might have been part of the holdup with Dallas, just because, you know, we don't know what the Dallas Stars are exactly. I mean, getting Erik Karlsson makes them a lot better, but are they in a sort of top-tier team in the Western Conference? Probably not, if you look at teams like Winnipeg last year and Vegas surprising people, and Nashville's always tough. And, you know, he's probably have to think about, do I want to spend 8 years in Dallas? So I think there's a lot of moving parts here, and it may not get done before training camp, but I think that's the hope for everybody.
You know, James, in 2015, Sens fans helped to save the life of the owner, Eugene Melnyk, and now it seems like the relationship has gone completely in the opposite direction. Do you think there's any chance that relationship can ever be repaired and he'll be an owner that fans are going to be happy with? Do you think winning would be sufficient?
No, I don't. I mean, even when the team is good, he tends to come out and say things that are, you know, goofy or unnecessary. And it's been a long time now where fans have sort of tired of his act and his kind of, you know, off-the-cuff remarks in the media about, no, this is as good as it gets, and, you know, maybe the team would look better somewhere else, all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, people are really sick of that around here, and it's getting worse every year. I mean, people were complaining about it, you know, have been complaining about it for years now, because the Senators were not spending to the cap before, when it looked like they had a better team. So people were questioning his commitment to building a winner here, you know, years ago already. And now the stuff that he said at the NHL 100 Classic just ratcheted all that up. And I'll tell you, just anecdotally around here, talking to people, like the amount of people who are, you would consider like hardcore super fans, who are just so upset with the situation here that they're basically telling me constantly, like, I'm checking out until this owner is gone. Like, we can't even stand to deal with him anymore. And I guarantee you, it's only going to get much, much worse when they do wind up moving Erik Karlsson, because, you know, there's the common denominator here with Alfredsson leaving and Karlsson leaving, is that reportedly neither of them really like Eugene Melnyk. So I think things are definitely going to get worse here before they get better. And I think you will definitely see that reflected in the attendance at the start of the year, which was already struggling.
James Gordon is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're discussing the Ottawa Senators and the Erik Karlsson trade saga. James, should people be confident in general manager Pierre Dorion to be the man who can lead the ship of the Ottawa Senators?
Well, I find it tough to make really extremely confident statements on that, because he has not been in the job that long, when you consider how long general managers usually get to build their team. I mean, they have not been a very good drafting team for a long time now. And certainly he wasn't the general manager that whole time, but he was very high in hockey ops and dealing with prospects. So I think that's a bit of a red flag. I mean, their NHL scouting and their NHL deals have been, you know, pretty terrible. The Alex Burrows trade is an obvious one. I think everyone was happy with the Mike Condon deal, which is fine. He did come in and play well for them a couple seasons ago. But then they turn around and sign him to a, you know, 2.4 or whatever it is, million a year contract, based on, you know, half a season of work, when this is a guy with a low career save percentage who hadn't really shown that he could be, you know, even a great NHL backup, let alone a number one, which I think they predicted he would fight for here. You know, they're stuck now with two more seasons of Craig Anderson at 4.5 or 4.4. Something like that, after he struggled, and, you know, some questionable signings, some questionable trades. And, you know, I think when you look at the organization, there was a long history of people kind of with gravitas at the top of the organization, you know, with the fans, with the media, with the players, like Brian Murray. It really showed after he passed on, you know, what he did to kind of keep this thing afloat. And things have been kind of falling apart ever since he was gone. And Pierre Dorion is doing his best, I think, to pull it all together. But certainly he hasn't shown too much right now that would give anyone real confidence that he can be the top leader of a hockey organization. And the other thing, too, that plays into that is, and it all comes back to money with Ottawa, you look at other organizational structures, you look at the Leafs, you look at any number of teams, you know, they have a general manager and then they have a president above the general manager who deals with some of the business stuff, who can be the face of the franchise when things are really bad. I mean, Pierre Dorion is probably trying to do five people's job right now because this organization doesn't have enough resources to hire enough people. They're understaffed in scouting. They're understaffed in analytics. They're understaffed in everything. So it's tough to rip on the guy because I don't think he has nearly as many resources as a lot of his peers do, but it'll certainly be something to watch here.
James, it might be tough to say because it's only mid-July, but are you leaning towards Brady Tkachuk playing for Boston University next season, or do you think there's a chance that Brady Tkachuk signs a professional hockey contract and plays for the Senators next year?
I'm not sure because it's hard to get a read on him and his family with that stuff. I think that probably his camp wants to see some sign that things are going to get, I guess, under control here. You know, there's been a lot of controversy around the team this summer with Erik Karlsson and with Mike Hoffman, who was eventually traded, and just a lot of stuff, I think, behind the scenes that were just not ideal to bring a young player into an organization and then ask them to basically come in. I mean, if they trade Erik Karlsson, what is there to be excited about here? It's going to be the future, I guess. You know, people are going to latch onto something. And Brady Tkachuk, the fourth overall pick, who's coming in this year if he does sign a contract. So do they want to throw him into that right away? Risk having it become like when the team thought Curtis Lazar was going to be the face of the franchise and then it was too much too soon and then he's, you know, close to being out of the league right now. I mean, it's not 100% comparable because Brady Tkachuk is a high pick and people expect him to do really well, but there is risk when you bring a young player in and there isn't a lot of support systems and you ask them to play a big role.
James Gordon covers the Ottawa Senators for TheAthletic.com. James, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. When we come back, Luke Korak of NHL.com is going to join us. He covers the St. Louis Blues. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Mr. Seltzer, and thank you.
Off the draw, Devils power play. It's Sammy Vatanen across. Palmieri with the pass across. They score! That's Patrick Maroon in front. The Devils' third power play goal of the night.
Patrick Maroon now plays for the St. Louis Blues. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Hour number two starts now. It's brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for over 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program Lou Korak. Lou is the St. Louis Blues correspondent for NHL.com. He's a good friend of the program. Lou, good afternoon, and thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me. How are you?
Doing very well, Lou. Always appreciate your time. Thanks for making time for us on this Saturday afternoon. You know, this time of year, you're sort of 2 weeks into free agency, things are really beginning to settle down a little bit. You ask most people who are on their list of winners and losers thus far through free agency, and most people would say the St. Louis Blues have done a lot of good things this offseason to improve a team that really only fell one win short of making the playoffs last year. Now you look at them, and they have a lot of good things going for them entering in the 2018-19 regular season.
Yeah, I think you have to put them in the conversation now up there with Winnipeg and Nashville at the top of the Central Division. They've definitely shored up their forward crop with some good center icemen, which they were in dire need of, with trading for Ryan O'Reilly and then picking up Tyler Bozak, and bring back David Perron for a third stint, which I thought maybe there was a chance of that happening again, but you weren't quite sure. And you bring in a backup goalie as well, with Chad Johnson, to compete for some ice time there with Jake Allen. And, now you cap it off with bringing back the hometown boy, Pat Maroon, which I think is one of the more underrated moves out there, especially for the dollar that you're signing him at. You talk about a hometown discount. I think, he definitely could have, commanded more and would have commanded more and certainly deserved it on the open market. But there's that bond of coming home, and he's got a 9-year-old son that he's very, very close to. And I think he sees the writing on the wall that this team made some drastic improvements, and he's betting on himself to come back after a minor back procedure that he had, that he's expected to start skating here early next week. The Blues can probably turn this around, and one would think that there may be one of those handshake agreements that, if things, go well in the early going here, will open up discussions for an extension in January. So they've really shored up a number of areas, and let's not forget, Robbie Fabry, if he comes back healthy, you're talking about a guy that, was playing and really on the rise before the knee surgery. So there's a lot of options there for Mike Yeo now, something that he did not have at the end of last year.
Lou, to go back to Patrick Maroon, I agree with you. After he was acquired by the Devils from the Edmonton Oilers, he was a really good player for them, nearly a point-a-game player. When you're talking about Maroon, what are realistic expectations for him? Should we expect him to be a third-line winger, or is it possible that he could have a top-six role for the Blues?
No, I definitely think he can play. Well, he can play anywhere up and down the lineup. Let's make no mistake about that. But I'm envisioning, and obviously this is going to be, Mike Yeo's call and the coaching staff's call, but I'm envisioning him playing on a line with Ryan O'Reilly and Vladimir Tarasenko. And the reason I say that is, look how good this worked in Edmonton when he played with McDavid and Draisaitl. I think it worked out quite well for that group. I think the St. Louis Blues can certainly envision a similar situation with O'Reilly and a Tarasenko. I mean, imagine Tarasenko's a guy that if he's in prime shooting positions, he's got one of the more lethal shots in the league. And if you got a guy like Maroon and even a guy like O'Reilly, who's known for it as well, going in, digging out pucks and doing a lot of the dirty work and retrieving pucks in the offensive zone. And he's a very underrated passer. Can you imagine, Tarasenko, the kind of year that he could have with a guy like that, that's going to be out there, that's going to bring some size, and it's going to have the opposition thinking more, thinking twice about whether they're going to go in and try to knock Tarasenko around a little bit if you got a Pat Maroon on the ice with him. But it's still early. I mean, we could play out all sorts of different scenarios here, but that's the good thing about a guy like that, is you can play him on the first line, you can play him on a fourth line, and he even talked about that when we spoke to him the other day down at Enterprise Center, that he's open to anything and whatever role the Blues decide to use him in, he's going to welcome it with open arms.
Lou, there seems to be a lot of hype about 20th overall pick in 2017, Robert Thomas. What is the plan for him in St. Louis?
Good question. I think looking at it right now, I don't envision him going back to juniors, and Doug Armstrong has hasn't really put a stamp on that yet, that's totally out of the question. But, you know, just reading between the lines, that feeling like going back to juniors may be counterproductive for him and doesn't see really the benefits of doing that, looks certainly like he's going to make the St. Louis Blues roster. Now, when you're looking at their depth at center, you're talking Shen, O'Reilly, and Bozak as your top three guys, and that's pretty good to start off with. And it's kind of hard to envision a Robert Thomas as a fourth line center, considering he's a skilled guy. But there's always that chance that they could start off with him, perhaps as playing on the wing. I mean, Robbie Fabry came into the league as a natural center iceman, and he's transitioned over to the wing quite well. So I'm not certain that that's what the Blues are going to do with him, but it could be one of those situations where they could start him off as a fourth line center and just kind of let him ease into the league a little bit, not really put too much pressure on the kid, but, certainly some expectations there for him. I mean, he's had a great junior career and led Hamilton to the OHL championship this year, and, they led him at the Memorial Cup as well. They fell short there, but had a tremendous season when he went over to Hamilton. Robert Thomas is certainly a guy, one of their top prospects, let's put it that way, along with Jordan Kyrou. I know they traded away Tage Thompson, but they saw him very highly. And in that group of four also is Klim Kalstin. So, you know, they're expecting a lot of big things from Robert Thomas, but certainly there are a lot of options that they can go with to start off.
Lou Korak is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Lou is the St. Louis Blues correspondent for NHL.com. Lou, if you look at the defense for the Blues, I mean, Pietrangelo, Parayko, Bouwmeester, Gunnarsson, Bertuzzo, and Dunn, that doesn't even include Jordan Schmaltz and Joel Edmondson once they get their RFA statuses resolved. Presumably they get those resolved. How do you see the Blues' defensive situation sort of shaking out when they have really eight guys who would consider themselves NHL-caliber defensemen?
Well, and that's one of the reasons why Doug Armstrong really didn't want to touch that, because he knows from past experience that depth is certainly something you have to have. And the Blues have sustained some injuries, obviously, to their blue line, and namely Gunnarsson with the ACL tear and Jay Bouwmeester with the hip injury. You never know how those guys are going to come into training camp, and they're expected to be 100% and ready to go, but you just never know how that's going to turn out. But, obviously Alex Pietrangelo is your number one guy, and Colton Parayko's name was out there quite a bit. And I know I have been asked throughout the summer countless times. I mean, I couldn't even tell you guys how many times people were asking whether he's even on the market or not. And the couple times that I talked to Doug Armstrong insisted that he was not shopping Colton Parayko. So that just tells you of the depth that the Blues have on their blue line. And they really like that. That's a really strong 1-2 punch on their right side with Pietrangelo and Colton Parayko. And they really like Vince Dunn as an up and coming guy. And Joel Edmondson's not going anywhere. Let's make no mistake about it. I wouldn't be surprised. His arbitration hearings due up on July 25th, but I wouldn't be surprised if the Blues get something done with him prior to that. They had a situation with Parayko last year in that same regard, and they took it down to the very last day, actually the morning of the arbitration hearing, and they were able to get an extension done with him. So pretty solid there, as a top four grouping. And Robert Bertuzzo, obviously a guy that you can use on your third pairing, and Gunnarsson, Bouwmeester, they have options. Jordan Schmaltz is a guy that they've always viewed as kind of a long-term project, and that's certainly the way it's been with him being a 2012 first-round pick. So definitely a lot of options there as well. But if these guys are all healthy, it's going to certainly bring some competition, and you never know. If they have to look to move somebody, maybe they go that route, because, getting Edmondson under contract is going to push them right up against the cap.
Lou, you mentioned Ryan O'Reilly earlier and Tage Thompson, the Blues' 2016 first-round pick. Do you think the cost that Blues GM Doug Armstrong had to pay to acquire Ryan O'Reilly was worth it? Obviously, Vladimir Sobotka was more of a throw-in, but Patrick Berglund, Tage Thompson, the conditional first-round pick, the additional pick, do you think that cost was worth acquiring Ryan O'Reilly? Because I think you would agree that makes them much stronger up the middle.
Well, and that's just it. They knew going into this that they needed to upgrade at center, let's make no mistake about it. And certainly, they became weaker down the middle once they traded Paul Stastny to Winnipeg. And,
you know, but that was a move that they felt like at the time that they had to make because, you know, there was really no guarantee that the Blues were going to make the playoffs, and ultimately they didn't. So they wanted to get something in return there, knowing that Paul Stastny was going to be an unrestricted free agent, and judging by the dollars that he got with the Vegas Golden Knights, the St. Louis Blues, although they entertained bringing him back, believe it or not, they weren't going to go to that dollar cost. So they felt like they had to do something there, but it certainly made him weaker. But yeah, Ryan O'Reilly, I mean, they had to pay a price for him, and you look at it on paper, it is a pretty big price. But in order to do that, I don't think they minded too much of shedding the salaries of Berglund and Sobotka, because that basically washes out what you're going to be paying Ryan O'Reilly now. And it tells you, you know, how much they value him by going ahead and making that trade on July 1st and picking up that roster bonus that was due of $7.5 million. So that just tells you that they were going all in for him. They've liked the player for a long time. They value his two-way center ice abilities and ability to win those faceoffs. And this is a possession hockey team, and when he's winning 60% of the faceoffs, it bodes well for them. And you know, Doug Armstrong has had Tage Thompson's name come up in the past and was unwilling to trade him. That just goes to tell you how much he valued Ryan O'Reilly if he's willing to include him there. And you just never know how those draft picks are going to come out. And it's a similar situation to the price that they paid when they picked up Braden Schenn last year. So something that they were definitely comfortable in doing, but I can understand from the outside some may feel that it was a heavy price.
You know, Lou, one thing you're talking about prospects and, you know, the importance of development, and, you know, with the St. Louis Blues sharing their AHL affiliate last year with the Vegas Golden Knights, with the Chicago Wolves, you know, we saw them having to make some unusual moves, including loaning players like Tanner Kaspik, who's from Brandon, made his pro debut here with the Manitoba Moose. How much more impactful do you think it'll be for them to have their own affiliate next year with the San Antonio Rampage?
Oh, it's huge, and that's a great point that you bring up, because that's one of those underlying things that they had to deal with last year that I thought was really harmful to them in a sense that they really couldn't develop their prospects the proper way. And I can tell you that a guy that's a perfect example is Clem Costin. And you know, the way they were utilizing him in San Antonio last year was probably not a situation that if the Blues had control of that franchise that wouldn't have gone down the way it did. Didn't put up quite the numbers that you would maybe expect for a guy that was coming in with the clout that he had. And I believe he only had 6 goals last year in 66 games. And he was moved up and down the lineup, and which is understandable. I mean, they were still controlled by the Colorado Avalanche, so the Avalanche were looking out for their prospects more than anything. And, you know, but he's a perfect example of that. And now that they're able to get their own coaches in there and get their own people in there to develop these prospects the proper way is going to be so beneficial. And I think if they had this situation there last year, Clem Costin might be a guy that could have made his NHL debut this year. And you never know. He still could. But I think last year was almost a lost year of development for a guy like him and others around the organization that they had. And that's one of those things that hasn't been talked about a whole heck of a lot, but it certainly made an impact on them by basically losing an entire year.
Lou Korak covers the St. Louis Blues for NHL.com. Lou, always appreciate your time and your insight. Thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Hey, thanks, guys. Take care.
Take care, Lou. We'll do it again soon. When we come back, we discuss our winners and losers through the first couple weeks of free agency. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Doug said to slow down because they were offside, and now the pass ahead, deflected in over the blue line, kept in there by O'Reilly. He scores!
Formerly of the Buffalo Sabres, he's now a member of the St. Louis Blues, as we just discussed with Lou Korak. That's Ryan O'Reilly sniping, going up the middle now for the Blues. They go pretty deep up the middle. They got Tyler Bozak also in free agency, but you go up the middle with Braden Schenn, Ryan O'Reilly, and Tyler Bozak. That's a pretty good 1-2-3 center ice combination for the St. Louis Blues. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Specializing in customization services and branded team apparel, Keener Jerseys is changing the game with world-class craftsmanship and unparalleled service. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit KeenerJerseys.com or check out their showroom at 982 Portage Avenue. That's the corner of Portage and Sherburne. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you. Winners and losers. We're about the halfway through the month of July. It's getting to be the pretty quiet time in and around the NHL world.
My birthday's coming up, by the way.
Well, that's one day not to celebrate, that's for sure. When is your birthday
10 days
again?
From now.
Yeah, 10 days from now, right? You're the 24th.
July 24th.
Right.
The same birthday as Barry Bonds.
Ah, interesting.
And Rory McGoran.
And Rory McGoran.
And Rory McGoran, apparently. And a day before, of course, Sheldon's birthday.
Yes.
Yes. You know who shares my birthday? 8-7. No?
Sid the Kid.
Sidney Crosby.
Yeah,
exactly. 8787.
Yeah, you think your birthdays are important?
Yeah.
You know what happens on my birthday?
What's that?
Usually the NHL files for a walkout.
On your birthday?
Yes, September 15th.
Oh, okay. Well,
no big deal.
It's always, you know,
it's Gary Bettman's second birthday.
Anyways, some winners and losers as we sit here, you know, halfway through the month of July as free agency, you know, you're more sort of bargain basement shopping at this point in time for winners and losers.
Right. And, you know, for me, I can't not put the St. Louis Blues as one of my winners here. And that includes, by the way, what they've done acquiring Ryan O'Reilly here. You know, for me, when I factor in the offseason, it's basically after the Stanley Cup playoffs are over, and it includes the draft, trades, and free agency. So
improving your team by any which way entering the 2018-19 season.
Right, and we just talked to Lou Korak about it. I mean, Doug Armstrong had to give up Patrick Berglund, Vladimir Sobotka, Tage Thompson, and the draft picks. But to me, I mean, Ryan O'Reilly is a huge upgrade over Patrick Berglund. He's much better offensively. And then I really like what they did acquiring Tyler Bozak. And you could say that maybe they overpaid a little bit. He makes $5 million AAV, but they only gave him 3 years, Drew. So he's 32 years old. So it's not like you gave him a five-year contract, $5 million a year. I like how it was only a three-year contract. And then I really like how they brought back David Perron. We talked about it a couple of weeks back. I mean, David Perron had a really solid year with the Vegas Golden Knights. Obviously, Perron has played for the Blues before.
Twice.
He's going to be a perfect third-line veteran winger for them. And then Patrick Maroon, again, it's only a one-year contract, and they only paid him $1.7 million a year. And you can say whatever you want about Patrick Maroon. He's slow or whatever. But the fact is, he had a lot of success playing with Connor McDavid, and that's not easy. So whether Patrick Maroon ends up playing on your second line or your third line, he's only on a one-year contract for $1.75 million a year. And I could easily see Patrick Maroon scoring 15 or 20 goals a year. So if he's giving you 15 or 20 goals a year for $1.75 million, I really like that. And, you know, I also wanted to throw in, you know, the Blues lose Carter Hutton to Buffalo, which is kind of funny because that's the team they traded with in the Ryan O'Reilly trade. But they replace him with Chad Johnson. Right, so they do the old goaltender flip.
Johnson, who was the backup behind Robin Lehner in Buffalo last season.
Right, and his numbers were really solid. We talked about Johnson maybe as a potential goaltender for the Jets, backup goaltender. So overall, I really like what the Blues have done here. I mean, when you look at their top nine with, you know, Braden Schenn, Jaden Schwartz, Tarasenko, Ryan O'Reilly, Alex Steen, Fabry, you know, we talked about Maroon and Bozak and Perron. I mean, that top nine, I would put that top nine up against most teams in the league.
I would agree with you. I mean, I look at what the St. Louis Blues have done, and this is a team. The biggest question mark for me for the St. Louis Blues is what Jake Allen is going to show up for the majority of the season, because everywhere else on that roster, they seem to be just very solid. They might not be flashy. But, you know, you have Vladimir Tarasenko, who, when his head is on right, is one of the best scorers in the NHL. And you just go, if you talk about, you know, center ice depth as being important and being the most important in the NHL, you build your team up the middle, blah, blah, blah. Going Schenn, O'Reilly, and then Tyler Bozak, to me, is very underrated as a third-line centerman, especially one who's playing with quality wingers, you know, potentially like Maroon or like Perron. The St. Louis Blues, to me, are right there with the Jets and with the Predators in the upper echelon of the Central Division and the upper echelon of the Western Conference, Dave Minuk.
Yeah, no, there's no question. I was going to use them as one of my reference points, but as he told me, I'm not allowed to use the same team as him. So I'm going to flip over to a pretty easy one. I think the Toronto Maple Leafs are the big winners. There's no doubt about it. I mean, they landed the biggest fish in the entire ocean, and you know, the fact is that there was a lot of contention as to whether he would actually want to go back and play in front of his home, you know, the, where he's from. And I thought, and we talked about it a few weeks ago when we were discussing as to where John Tavares would end up. And to me, the idea that he could go to a good young team, you know, that still has some areas that they need to work on, but, you know, especially specifically, obviously, their defense. But they've got a great minor league system in the Toronto Marlies, who just won the Calder Cup. They've got a lot of nice little prospects that they can, you know, call up from the AHL. So to me, the Toronto Maple Leafs were big winners because they landed the biggest fish in the market. And to me, that essentially got it done for them. So, you know, you've got a player who is really there, you know, obviously he's getting paid, he's, you know, he's getting very well paid, but at the same time, he's there for one purpose. He's there to win a Stanley Cup. So if you're fans in Toronto right now and you're looking at what your GM did and you're looking at your team overall, you're very happy going into just after free agency ended.
Look, if you acquire the best player, you usually are going to be a winner. And John Tavares is undoubtedly, he was the biggest fish, as you alluded to. But I just want to tap the brakes for a second. We were off last week, so we haven't been on in a couple weeks. The thought that the Toronto Maple Leafs are, you know, a Stanley Cup favorite right now, or the Stanley Cup...
No, I never said that.
No, the odds-on betting favorite right now is the Toronto Maple Leafs. Now, a part of that is that, you know, the odds makers are appealing to, you know, stupid gamblers who think that acquiring Tavares makes Leafs the ultimate favorite. You look at the right side of their defense. They're not winning anything with the right side of their defense as currently constructed. Never mind the fact that even out on their left side, after Morgan Rielly, they're pretty thin. It's the same defense last year that got exposed by the Boston Bruins in that seventh game, especially Jake Gardner. So if the Leafs don't do anything else to improve their defense, you're not winning anything.
Yeah, sure. I would agree with that. That defense still needs a lot of work, guys. Yeah. And for me, the other big winner is the other team that was involved in the Ryan O'Reilly trade, and that's obviously the Sabres. And one of the more underrated moves, I thought, of the offseason was acquiring Connor Sheary and Matt Hunwick for a fourth-round pick. I mean, when you're talking about Connor Sheary, yes, I understand he's played with Crosby and Malkin.
Helping the Penguins with that salary dump is what
right,
he did.
But you're talking about, when you're talking about Sheary, you're talking about 41 goals over 2 years. Matt Hunwick is a depth defenseman. I mean, Matt Hunwick's going to be a third-pairing defenseman at best for the Sabres. When you're talking about Sheary, you can acquire Sheary and a defenseman. All you have to give up is a fourth-round pick. I thought that was a very savvy move by Jason Botterill, making that trade with the team that he used to work for. And then when you talk about, you know, the haul that they got back for Ryan O'Reilly, I mean, Patrick Berglund, he can be your second line center, your third line center. Sobotka, he can play on the wing on your second line or your third line. And then obviously Tage Thompson is a guy that's most likely going to play in the NHL this year. He's already played in the NHL with the St. Louis Blues, plus you get the first round pick. So I thought Botterill did a really good job getting assets back for Ryan O'Reilly. And then the big one is for me is Carter Hutton. You've already got Linus Allmark, who's pretty young, and he's going to be your backup goaltender. But Carter Hutton had a breakthrough year last year, best save percentage in the NHL for the St. Louis Blues, and that's a big upgrade over Robin Lehner, in my opinion. So for me, the Sabres are a big winner here.
Let me tell you why I'm a little bit less bullish on the Sabres than you are, Ezzy. And you mentioned Carter Hutton. We've seen so many times before where a goaltender has good numbers like Hutton did in what I'm going to describe as more limited time, and then when they try and translate that into a full-time job and a full-time starting goaltender role, they're not able to replicate that. I look at Scott Darling in Carolina last year. He had very good numbers with Chicago. He goes to Carolina. He isn't able to replicate that. Now, the Sabres are improved over last season, there's no question about that. But I still don't know that this is a playoff team in Buffalo. I still think they're a little bit short of the top eight.
Well, the Atlantic Division also got so much better, right? So, I mean, it's going to be very tough. I don't think that the Sabres are going to make the playoffs either, but they're going to be much better than they were last year.
You're right. They certainly are on an upward trajectory, which is more than you can say for the Sabres over the last number of years. Actually, Dave, we're going to hold off on that. We'll come back to this maybe in the last segment of the show when we talk about some of our teams that maybe lost a little bit this offseason, because when we come back, Tyson Nash, Arizona Coyotes color analyst, is going to join us, talk about what the Coyotes have done this offseason. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Bottom of hour number two. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuke, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to be joined by Tyson Nash. Tyson is the TV analyst for the Arizona Coyotes, a good friend of the program. Tyson, thanks very much for joining us this afternoon.
Absolutely. Happy to do it. Nice to talk hockey this deep into the summer.
We do it 12 months a year, as you well know, Tyson. Brought you on to talk about the Arizona Coyotes. They've certainly had a busy offseason. You know, they sign Oliver Ekman-Larsson to the contract extension. They acquire Alex Galchenyuk. They acquire Vinny Hinostroza this week from the Chicago Blackhawks. It seems to me, and, you know, you're on the ground in Arizona with this team day in, day out, it seems to me that this Coyotes franchise is right now at one of its most stable points over the past decade, as it has been in a long while.
Well, and I think that has obviously to do with our owner Andrew Barraway, the commitment that he has to this team and building a championship team. Obviously, the job that the John Chyka has done, I don't think he gets enough credit for all the moves that he's pulled off, the trades, the signings. This is a guy that, doesn't have a huge hockey background as far as himself playing the game. But as far as how to make moves and the analytics side of the game and leaving no stone unturned, this guy is just genius. I mean, another great move, a move with the Chicago Blackhawks. Obviously, they were in a cap situation that needed, some fixing. So it worked for Chicago, and obviously it worked for us in Arizona with the players that we got back in return. So he's done that a few times. I'm surprised more GMs, in fact, don't do that type of thing. But again, the trades, the draft picks. This is a team, as you mentioned, is in a real good position. I can't say that they're going to make the playoffs this year, but man, the next 2, 3, 5, 6 years. 10 years for this organization looks real, real good.
Tyson, to go back to that trade a month ago that sent Max Domi to Montreal and Alex Galchenyuk the other way, as you know, Galchenyuk was a controversial figure there in Montreal with, you know, him playing on the wing and really wanting to play center. Is there any doubt in your mind that he's going to play center for the Coyotes?
Well, they need they need strength down the middle. And, if he wasn't happy in Montreal because he wasn't playing the center ice position, he's going to get an opportunity and a real good look at center ice for the Coyotes. I can promise you that. That's been a real weak spot, for this organization for a long, long time. They really haven't had a true number one, centerman for years and years. It was Martin Hamble for the longest time. I think the last maybe true number one, and I'm not even sure he was a number one guy, was Damon Lanko. And I don't think, you consider him a number one centerman. So you look at any team that wins in this league, they have that strength at the center ice position. I love Max Domi. I absolutely love everything about this kid. But obviously to get something good, you got to give away something good. And, I think it was a great trade for the Coyotes. Galchenyuk's probably a little bit more of a natural goal scorer. He can fill the net with pucks, and I know he's hungry. I know he's excited about this opportunity, and it really was one of those trades that was good for both teams.
Tyson, Arizona Coyotes defenseman Oliver Ekman-Larsson signed the big 8-year deal with the team. He said he consulted with Shane Doan before he signed the contract. Are you surprised that Shane Doan is still playing a big role, in players in discussing those sorts of things with players?
Well, I can promise you this: Oliver Ekman-Larsson, was probably pretty sure of himself before he even talked to Shane Doan. He loves it in the Valley. He loves everything about it. He loves the lifestyle. He's got a beautiful home there in Arizona. And he loves, most importantly, where this franchise is going. And, he played under Shane Doan for a lot of years. And it's not surprising that guys still go. I still go to Shane Doan for advice on a lot of things around town, around just hockey in general. He's one of those guys that he's a father figure in a lot of ways. He knows a lot about the business, especially now being a part of the NHL with Gary Bettman and Coley Campbell. He's learned so much, and he's just a wealth of knowledge. But obviously, Oliver Ekman-Larsson sticking with the Coyotes You know, that's a testament to the organization, what he thinks and where he thinks it's going. He could have got a lot more money. I can promise you that elsewhere in the free agent market. So for him to stay here long term and make that commitment tells you where this franchise is going. And he, in my mind, I watch this kid play every single night, and he is still a kid. That's the best thing about it. And his best hockey is yet to come. He has been through hell the last two or three years personally, with the death of his mother, some injuries as well that he's been dealing with. So to see him persevere the way he has and come out of it like he did last season, the best is yet to come for Oliver. I think he's a top five defenseman in this league.
Tyson Nash is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Tyson's a color analyst for the Arizona Coyotes. Tyson, Antti Raanta, his season in Arizona last year was sort of a little under the radar. He was injured for so much of the first part of the season, and that his injury and the performance of his backups really put the Coyotes behind the eight ball. They weren't really able to recover throughout the rest of the season. But when he was healthy, he had a .930 save percentage for the Coyotes. Is he the ticket? Is he the key for the Coyotes to have extended success next season?
Well, he's going to have to be the key. I mean, you look at any team, you need a number one goaltender. And you need that guy to stand on his head and be consistent in how they play. And Antti Raanta, when he was healthy, he was lights out. Just had a real rough start to the year. And as you mentioned, put the team behind the eight ball. Louis Domingue, he couldn't stop a beach ball for the first, month. Well, really, till they traded him away. He struggled mightily, and we could never really recover as an organization last year. But with Antti Raanta in net, he proved he's a number one guy, when healthy. So he's got to remain healthy, come in, and have a huge impact. And I like where this team can go. And if he can play as good as he did, or even, a little bit, below where he did, but be consistent, this team has a shot to make the playoffs. It's as simple as that.
Tyson, Lawson Crouse and Dylan Strome, both first-round picks. They played the majority of the season for the Tucson Roadrunners last year. They both played a little bit for the Coyotes. But this year, are you expecting both of these players to play a full year in the NHL?
Well, what I love about this team and what they haven't had for a long, long time, and again, credit to John Chayka, they haven't had internal competition. Dylan Strome, yeah, he's a slam dunk for sure. This guy proved he went down. There were so many question marks, swirling around this kid. Is he going to be a bust? Can he skate well enough to be an impact player in the NHL? Is he going to be an impact player in the NHL? Or is he just going to, take up a roster spot? But he proved himself, went down to the American Hockey League. A lot of credit to Coach Van Ryan down there, who did a remarkable job with all these young kids, teaching them how to play the pro game, how to develop, how Dylan Strome is going to have to play, and where he needs to get his game to have an impact and be that guy in the NHL. Well, he did it in the American League, and then he did it when he got that opportunity with the Coyotes late in the season. He was unbelievable. In fact, he was one of our best players down the stretch, the points that he put up. Now, Lawson Crouse, he's one of those guys. I mean, there's six or seven guys in the American League last year that played there that are going to have a real good long look. So, really, for me, it comes down to, proving yourself. No one's, just going to be given a jersey. Rick Tocchet doesn't work that way. He knows what it takes to win in this league, and he's going to put a team together that's going to give him the best chance to do that. And if Lawson Crouse can prove, which I think he can, that he can be that guy night in and night out and be that physical presence, bring a little scoring touch to the team with that big frame of his, then yeah, he'll make it.
Tyson, I was reading a Q&A being done with the new CEO and president of the team, Aaron Cohn, and he was saying that there's 68% of folks in Arizona right now are most looking forward to the Arizona Coyotes season and have the most confidence, I guess, in the Coyotes right now. Are you hearing that kind of buzz in Arizona?
Yeah, it's been exciting. I mean, it has been a slow process, boys. I can tell you that. It has been it's been a long 4 or 5 years. I've been broadcasting this team for 10 years now, and it's been a roller coaster. But this team is stable, and it starts with the ownership. And I think the people that are close to this team can really see that, and they see the leadership, and it starts at the top. And Andrew Barraway, an incredible owner. Obviously, Aaron Cohn, now the president of this team, he's proved himself. He's trying to get a new arena deal done. And then the hiring of Rick Tocchet and what he brings, stability-wise. You look at the players around the league, and I talk to them all. Everybody, wants to come and play for the Coyotes. Not only is it one of the best places in the world to live and play in the NHL, but they see where this team is headed. They're not there yet, but they see where this team is headed. And you know, we haven't had that ability at come free agency for players to draw players in because there's always been an ownership issue. There's always been, you know, a lack of stability, and players don't want that. They want us, you know, go to a stable franchise. And right now, the Coyotes, I like where we're at.
You know, Tyson, right now in studio, I'm proudly wearing my Sauce Hockey Humboldt Strong t-shirt. So we have to ask you about the In One podcast that debuts in August of this year with Mike Commodore, yourself, and Danny Allstar. Aside from Commie getting in one, what can we expect from the podcast that debuts next month?
Oh, man. You know what? I don't even know. And I think that's the best part about it. I mean, these two guys, you know, they're characters, the ultimate characters. Like, I can promise you that. There will be a high entertainment value. And I'm just going to try to just behave and not get myself into any trouble because I think the lips will be flapping. So it's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to it. Mike Commodore is one of the best guys out there. He was always a great locker room guy, good player, great storyteller, and I'm anxious to bring it to the people. I think everyone's going to be really excited.
And Tyson Nash is the Arizona Coyotes TV analyst. Tyson, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks, boys. Thanks for the plug, too.
Take care. Thanks, Tyson. When we come back, we discuss our losers from thus far in the NHL offseason, as he's got a couple names on his list. He's ready to tear some things up and burn some houses down. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
One final segment this Saturday afternoon. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Nice little Saturday.
A nice little Saturday. Indeed, a quick programming note, of course. We'll be back at our regular time, 9 a.m. next Saturday. So you can be sure to tune into TSN 1290 for that. 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. next Saturday, 2 hours of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Must listen to radio.
Must listen to radio, says Illegal Curve Hockey.
That's right.
It's funny how that works.
Yeah. We have no vested interest.
We have no vested interest in tooting our own horn whatsoever. This segment, final segment of the show, brought to you by our good friends of Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey.
When is Ron Jeremy coming on?
Ron Jeremy would be on the show. I'm not sure that's going to happen, but he's coming to Rumors on Sunday, August the 12th, one night only. Ron Jeremy at Rumors Comedy Club. Tickets available right now, rumorscomedyclub.com if you want to get your seats. And of course, tonight at Rumors, if you're looking for a place to maybe get out of the heat and get into some laughter and into some air conditioning, Joe Zimmerman, two shows of Rumors, his final night in town, 7:15 and 10 o'clock. Tickets available, like I said, rumorscomedyclub.com.
Any relation to baseball player Ryan Zimmerman?
I don't know, but if you want to go and ask him, I can probably arrange for that to happen. But, you know, you'll have to ask him yourself on that question. I don't know the answer.
It's been a while
I'm
since
just
they've
say, been Zimmerman
at Rumors.
Is a pretty generic last name.
Yeah.
It's unlikely that every Zimmerman is related to one another. Not like Ginsburg. Ginsburg is, you know,
a little
unique,
bit more unique, yeah.
Yeah, powerful last name.
There aren't as many Ginsbergs as Winnipeg as there are Minooks.
No, there's more. Well, I mean, you know,
that's a good point.
That's just Winnipeg royalty right there is Minook. Let's talk about our losers. We talked about some of our winners. You had the Buffalo Sabres. We were all in agreement about the St. Louis Blues as our winners thus far in the NHL offseason. What about losers? What teams do you look about and you're scratching your head and saying, what are they doing?
Well, I mean, you got to start with the New York Islanders. I mean, and it would go further than free agency, unfortunately, for them, because the whole point is that, you know, if you didn't think that John Tavares was signing, you needed to trade him before the trade deadline. And now you've lost your franchise player. You didn't replace him with anything. And don't get me wrong. If we were talking about draft, you know, we think that the New York Islanders did very well in the draft this year.
Mm-hmm.
But the New York Islanders haven't done anything to truly adjust their goaltending, I don't believe. And you know, I just think that you've got a team that's just kind of going to be in a wasteland for the next little bit. They've got some nice pieces, but again, they don't have enough. So to me, you know, you added a Stanley Cup winning coach in Barry Trotz. You added Lou Lamoriello as the general manager. I think those are solid moves, but the problem is the product on the ice is what we're talking about. And I think from the perspective of a fan base in New York that really was hoping that John Tavares was going to stay, they were going to add some more pieces, and this was going to be a franchise that was turning itself around. I don't see that in New York, unfortunately. I think it might be they might not be winners again until they're back on Long Island.
So you're not crazy about giving Leo Komarov 4 years and $3 million per season, or Valtteri Filppula $2.75 million.
If this was 5 years ago, maybe.
Yeah, Dave, and there's the familiarity with Komarov. You know, Lamoriello obviously was in Toronto and, you know, had Komarov there, but I just don't think he's going to make your team much better. I mean, losing Tavares was the worst thing that could have possibly happened to the Islanders, because you're just not going to be able to replace him. So Komarov and Filppula, I mean, those are veteran depth pieces. Mm-hmm. But you're not going to be a very good team next year without Johnny T down the middle. So for me, the Edmonton Oilers have to be a loser. And quite frankly, Drew, I'm surprised that Peter Chiarelli made no moves this offseason. None. No trades. I'm talking about trades.
I know, but every time he does trade, it's a terrible trade. So maybe this was a good thing that he didn't make a trade.
But for me,
McDavid for Adam Larson again.
I don't understand what he's doing there. And you heard rumors that Chiarelli was trying to move Milan Lucic, and you heard that he was trying to move Oscar Klefbom. And I actually like Oscar Klefbom. I don't necessarily like his contract, but you lose Brandon Davidson, you lose a couple of other players. They didn't lose anybody that significant. Mike Camilleri, Johan Ovitu, who's a depth defenseman. Anton Slepyshev is going to go to the KHL. But your big moves were basically signing Tobias Rieder to a one-year, $2 million contract. Mm-hmm. And at this point, he's kind of a journeyman forward. Kyle Brodziak, I mean, I like him as your fourth-line center. But the Edmonton Oilers, their problem last year was not depth centers. I mean, when you look at the Edmonton Oilers, their big problem was in net and on defense. And the only defenseman they signed was Kevin Gravel. And Kevin Gravel, with all due respect, I mean, he's a seventh or eighth defenseman. He's more of an AHL defenseman.
If Kevin Gravel is playing significant minutes for your team, things are probably not going as you designed.
Right. And as it stands now, I mean, you're going with the same top six, right? We talked about Klefbom, Adam Larson, Andre Sequeira, Chris Russell. Matthew Benning was re-signed to a two-year contract. Darnell Nurse is an RFA. He's in their top six. I just don't know why you wouldn't make a move there and upgrade your defense, because right now I don't think the Oilers have a number one defenseman. I think they have a bunch of number three defensemen.
You're not wrong. You mentioned the backup goaltender position. They paid a lot of money for a guy who's got no NHL experience. They gave Mikko Koskinen a one-year, $2.5 million contract to bring him over from Europe to be ostensibly the backup goaltender to Cam Talbot. It seems like that $2.5 million could probably have been spent better elsewhere to maybe try and upgrade one of those positions besides backup goaltender. I mean, the Oilers now have just over $6.6 million in their goaltending.
Right. And Mikko Koskinen, I mean, he's had a great career overseas. I mean, they only signed him to the one-year contract. It's a little bit surprised that they gave him $2.5 million. But when you're talking about this Oilers team, I mean, Connor McDavid can score 140 points. If you can't keep the puck out of your own net, it doesn't matter. So, I mean, for me, I just don't necessarily know if they've gotten much better from last year. I mean, when you're talking about, you know, Brodziak and Toby Rieder and Kevin Gravel, I mean, these are depth players. I just thought, you know, Peter Chiarelli was going to be more active upgrading his defense.
Well, it just seems if you're the Oilers, you're assuming that bringing back pretty much the same roster is going to somehow lead to different results. Maybe you figure, you know, Klefbom and Sequeira, you know, regain some health after they had health issues. Remember, Sequeira was out for a lot of the beginning of the year last year. Maybe Darnell Nurse takes another step forward as an RFA. But you're absolutely right, Ezzy. It seems odd that you're banking on all this internal improvement rather than going out and supplementing the players on your roster that you had last year and maybe insulating them a little bit from the same results, Dave.
And I got to say, sorry, Dave, before you get in here, I know we only have about 3 minutes left here, but my other loser has to be the Detroit Red Wings. And I was a little bit surprised that some people were applauding them for some of the moves they made. But, you know, you lose Peter Mrazek to Carolina, so you replace him with Jonathan Bernier. Mm-hmm. So, fine, you're set in goal with Jonathan Bernier and Jimmy Howard. And I was actually surprised that they gave Bernier 3 years. I thought they might give him 1 year or 2 years there. But, you know, you bring in Thomas Vanek, who's played for the Wings before. And I realize Thomas Vanek can still get you 20 goals. But Mike Green is signed for two more years at $5.3 million a year. And they recently re-signed Anthony Mantha and Andreas Athanasiou. And I think Ken Holland knows that this team isn't going to be good next year. I mean, in that tough Atlantic division, I think he knows this is a rebuilding team. and the future, you know, it revolves around guys like Michael Rasmussen and Svechnikov and Filip Zadina, who they just drafted. I mean, the future is bright for the Red Wings. They're not going to be good next year. I don't really know what the rationale is to sign a guy like Thomas Vanek or Mike Green when you're going to be horrible next year.
Trade them for draft picks at the trade deadline. That's what I assume the only rationale is. You need players to bridge a gap for another year, and maybe you can sign them, get something out of them, and then trade them for, you know, third, fourth, fifth round.
And that's what I'm saying, Drew. You know, I just think, you know, that spot that's going to go to Thomas Vanek could have gone to a younger player.
Yeah, only if they had a younger player who's ready. That would be the caveat I'd put on that. Dave, quickly, as we're up against it.
Well, I would go with the Vancouver Canucks, and simply because they got Jay Beagle and Antoine Roussel. They gave him 4-year deals. I'm not saying that getting those guys for those, like getting those players to fill out your roster is okay, but I don't like the term. I think that if you're going to have young players, not necessarily this year, but in the next couple of years, fighting for roster spots, those contracts might end up looking bad.
That's it for this Saturday afternoon edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Again, a reminder, we're back to our regular time of 9 a.m. next Saturday. A big thank you to our guest, James Gordon of TheAthletic.com. We're joined by Luke Korak, St. Louis Blues correspondent for NHL.com, and Tyson Nash, Arizona Coyotes TV analyst. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on tsn1290.ca, on our website, illegalcurve.com, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Get it sent to you automatically each and every week. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zapia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. Support them because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. Big props to producer Rory, doing his great job behind the board. For Dave Minuk, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290.
As long as you set the team will be all right.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.